Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Kia ora and welcome to the Kiwi Birth Tales podcast. I am your host, Jordan. I am mum to two beautiful little boys, Jai and Ali. I also host the Your Birth Project online hypnobirthing course and the Mini Kiwis First Aid course for parents of under 5-year-olds. And I have an online store attached to Your Birth Project, which encompasses everything pregnancy, birth, and postpartum related. So just absolutely love that side of the business. I'm also a very, very passionate storyteller and a lover of all things birth. So hence why I am leading you on this podcast. I'm not an advocate for any particular type of birth or model of birth care. I am simply here to hold space for this platform for you to share your beautiful stories with us all. You'll hear stories of joy, of heartbreak, of love, of loss, and each family has a different experience to share. I'm trying to bring to light stories that we often only tell in the darkest of places or to our closest of friends, but really are so important for everybody to hear. So I hope that you love the podcast of these beautiful families all over Aotearoa, and I will let you jump into the podcast now. Enjoy. Today's episode of Kiwi Birth Tales is brought to you by Your Birth Project, and Your Birth Project is my online hypnobirthing course that you need to create your best birth. Doesn't matter what kind of birth you're planning or what kind of birth you end up having. It is applicable to all birth types, and if you want to check it out, you can head to www.yourbirthproject.com. You will also find my online store there, which is products for pregnancy, birth, and postpartum. They're all tried and tested by mums that follow the Kiwi Birth Tales page and suggested them, or I've used them myself and loved them. So everything in there is something that I would buy for myself or my sisters or my friends. I don't have sisters, but if I did, I'd buy them for them. or friends that are pregnant. And yeah, just products that I absolutely love. So make sure that you go and check out Your Birth Project. Everything you need for your best birth, pregnancy, or postpartum period. I'm finally back with another episode. I'm sorry if you've been waiting so long for this. I am just, trying to juggle a million different things right now, but I really, really want to prioritize getting this podcast to you weekly. So I'm sorry you've been waiting so long, but it is a goodie. This week I speak with Grace. She talks us through her really positive pregnancy, birth, and postpartum journey. She has a relatively standard pregnancy, but she's really active and she ends up having some reduced movements towards the end of her pregnancy. So she talks us through that. Into a spontaneous labor, a hospital birth, there was meconium in her baby's waters. So she talks us through what happens from there. And an epidural and Ventouse delivery. She talks about the birth education that she did and how that helped her mindset, and then into her postpartum experience. So I hope you love the episode. I will stop talking. You can jump straight into it. Let me know what you think. Send me an email, kiwibirthtales@gmail.com, or a message on Instagram @kiwibirthtales. All right, let's jump into it.
Hi, Grace. Thanks so much for joining me on the podcast today.
Hello. Thank you. I'm actually really stoked to be here.
Awesome. Would you like to tell the listeners a little bit about you and who is in your family?
Yeah, so my name is Grace. I'm a PE teacher and an F45 trainer in Wellington. And in my family is me, my partner Sam, my daughter Heidi, and we've got my friend Shireen that lives with us at our house too.
Do you want to talk us through what the journey to pregnancy was like for you and Sam?
Well, the getting pregnant part was the easy part, but prior to that, when I was a teenager, I had really bad periods, so I'd never had any confirmed endometriosis or anything like that, but when I was a teenager, I'd have to leave high school because they were just so heavy and so bad, and then went on, as many people did, contraception from quite a young age to try kind of sort that out, and thought, well, this is doing wonders, I'm not getting pregnant, I'm not having my period. I can go swimming all the time. It was marvelous. And then kind of popping out the other end of that and being like, oh, actually, I kind of want to see what my body's like without contraception and that sort of thing. And had some friends that had come off and had no issues whatsoever. And I was like, oh, that'll be me. I'll just get my period back and we'll be all good to go. And I'm pretty grateful that I decided to come off contraception before we was even in our realm of wanting to get pregnant, because it took me about 9 months to get a period back. And then from there, they were very irregular and still continue to be very irregular from that point onwards, which I think is not necessarily an uncommon situation that people find themselves in.
Yeah.
But yes, so very lucky that we weren't trying to get pregnant at that point in time. But yeah, so from that point on, had very irregular periods. So would be like 45 days, 30 days, 25 days. I just never really could pick what was going on or anything, which was fine. But then in 2020, as most of the world was kind of wanting to do, we were planning on going to Europe for about 8 weeks. And those dreams got cut very cancelled, unfortunately. But it also made us reassess quite a bit of stuff. And so we decided that actually maybe that was our big push to kind of start a family, which I'd been trying to get Sam to do for quite a while. And it, he kind of got him over the line. And the problem with me having the long cycles was, or the irregular cycles, is I didn't know, one, if I was ovulating, or two, when I was ovulating. So when should we actually have sex? So first month we kind of were just like, I'm not going to track anything, we'll just have sex, see what happens and go with the flow. And of course nothing did happen that month. And then second month, I'm quite a competitive person, and I was like, right, if we're gonna give this a crack, I'm gonna give it, you know, give it my all. I'm gonna be taking my temperature, I'm gonna be doing ovulation strips, I'm gonna be doing it all. And yeah, we were very, very lucky that that month we fell pregnant with what is now Heidi, which we were so, so stoked about. But yeah, ovulation strips were definitely the thing that signaled to me that I was ovulating late, which I would never have known and probably wouldn't have been having, wouldn't have been trying during that period.
Awesome. And so how did you end up finding out that you were pregnant? Did you have any symptoms that made you take a test?
No symptoms at that point. We were, it was a Friday morning and we were heading down to Queenstown for a good friend's 30th, and that night it was, well, the whole weekend really was going to be a bit of a piss up. And we were going on a pub crawl that night, and I knew we'd been trying stuff, and I was like, oh, maybe just to be sure, I better just do a test just in case, because don't really want to be drinking a whole lot of piss if I'm going to be pregnant. And took a test, and there was the faintest faint line, and I like looked at it and I was like, oh. And then your eyes are like, are they deceiving me? Is that what's going on there? But I was like, everything Googled was like, nah, like if you can see it, it's probably there, kind of thing. So I was like, oh, well, guess I'm not drinking tonight then.
Amazing. And how did you feel? Like, I just remember the pregnancy test lines, even though I knew I was probably pregnant, was such a shock. How were you feeling when you saw that positive test?
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? Like, you're like, you're actively trying, but you're still like, oh my Lord. Exactly, I just remember, I went to the, I think I went to the warehouse straight away before our flight, because I wanted to get like a little onesie to surprise my partner. And I remember just being in the warehouse and like looking at everyone and being like, oh my God, everyone here has been in someone's stomach. Like, this is crazy. It was just like, oh, it was a very surreal moment. But yeah, so exciting, so happy, so cool. Just super, super lucky.
Amazing. And did you think that you wanted to go with a midwife for your care?
Yeah, so I think midwifery care was definitely something I'd heard about from some of my friends, and I love the idea of having the same person throughout, as I know that's not necessarily the case in different countries around the world. So finding a midwife, the process was relatively easy for me to begin with. I had two of my really good friends that had used the same midwife, and they really recommended her. So I reached out to her, and she was like, yeah, I've got space. So that was awesome. But also prior to that, had also checked out Find My Midwife. And I know other people on the podcast have mentioned it. It's like a dating app for people, really, isn't it?
It is a bit.
So actually, that's what they should do. Maybe that's a gap in the market.
That's making a good idea.
A Tinder version for midwife, swipe right and stuff. But yeah, so I got in touch with her, and she was so, so lovely. Great lady, as most midwives are. They're such special people. Unfortunately, she, due to family circumstances, had to cut down her clientele, and so she was only keeping people that were repeat clients. I don't know if clients is the correct word there, but go with that. And so that was unfortunate. And I was like, oh, well, I found one the first time relatively quickly. Surely I'll be easily find a midwife again for the second time. So that's when I really had a big look on find my midwife. And because everyone else had the same plan as us, that travel had been cancelled and there were so many pregnant people, and midwives were in hot, hot demand, as they usually are, and there were just none available. I was searching high and low. I was willing to travel. I was willing to do anything. Not that I had anything against maybe the hospital midwives that you can go to if you don't find a midwife, but I just really quite like that idea of having the same person that was a bit more personable and knew your story and situation. So yeah, I got to about, I think, 16 or 17 weeks, so about 5 weeks, and I hadn't had any nibbles or anything like that. And my mum is a teacher also, and she was actively on the hunt on my behalf. And then I met, she was standing in the front yard of the schoolyard on road patrol one day, and she saw this lady walking towards her and was like, she's a midwife. I know she's a midwife. And so had a talk to her and said, but told, like, basically plead my case. And unfortunately the lady wasn't taking on any other clients, but she's like, oh, I might have a friend that might be able to squeeze you in. And so got put us in contact with this other lady, and yes, she could just take me in. And it's just fate, because I ended up with the beautiful Antonia, and it was just the best midwife that I could have ever ended up with. They are beautiful, beautiful humans. So thank God to my mum pouncing on people in the street to get me the midwife that I ended up with. I'm very grateful for that.
Amazing.
And so from there, I was able to have that continued care, which was awesome.
Awesome. And what was the rest of your pregnancy experience like? Did you have all of the standard testing that's offered in New Zealand, and did you find out the sex of your baby?
Yeah, so everything was, and I hate to say it, but I'm also celebrating the fact that most of my pregnancy was pretty textbook. I didn't really have many symptoms in that first trimester, just those really sore boobs that everyone complains about, and the nipples, oh my God, in the shower. Like just like shaver blades going across them or something like that. But no, I didn't have any nausea or that fatigue as well. As you probably know too, it just absolutely knocks you sideways. You just can't sleep enough, which is wild. But no, I was super, super lucky that didn't really have many symptoms that stopped me doing things like my work. I am an avid exerciser and runner, and kept going to the gym E45 for my entire pregnancy. So I was super, super lucky in that regard. Just the acid reflux in that third trimester, that was so, so awful. I just couldn't get enough Gaviscon down my throat to cope with it.
I can relate to that. It's pretty horrible.
Just nothing alleviates that whatsoever. Nothing at all. I really didn't mind what we were having. My partner Sam didn't really mind what we were having. And I was like, actually, pink or blue, yellow, green, purple, orange didn't really faze us whatsoever. I know that some people are super big planners, but for me, I was like, you can paint walls, you can buy clothes, like a baby's a baby. And I'd had really, my mum kind of pushed the idea of like, well, you know, you want a wee surprise at the end, you know, like a bit of incentive to get you through the whole labor. So I know some people just couldn't stand it and wanted to know. But what I found really interesting about that was people's reactions to us not finding out the sex of the baby, because obviously a lot of people do now, and it almost seemed like the older generation were so stoked that we weren't. Not that I'm pushing one way or the other, because it's totally up to you, but the older generation couldn't believe that we weren't finding out, because that's kind of all they had on offer when they were giving birth. So that was really lovely. It was a nice wee surprise at the end there.
Awesome. And did you do anything along the lines of antenatal classes? I know that you said it was COVID and lots of people were pregnant as well at the same time as you, but did you do any antenatal classes or birth education in your pregnancy?
As I kind of alluded earlier, I quite like to have all the information at hand, everything going on. So I kind of did a bit of everything. We attended 2 out of 4 of our antenatal classes because we had a couple of weddings on. We did the hatched online classes, which were really great because we could just do them from home. And then I did do your birth project as well, just because I was like, I just want all tools in my hand to be able to, you know, grasp this and handle all of this. So, yeah, just a little bit of everything, really, which was really cool.
Yeah, awesome. And did you have many thoughts on how you wanted your birth to go?
I think everyone kind of has like a desire or a dream about how they would quite like theirs to go. I mean, probably, if I'm honest, my ideal situation would have been unmedicated vaginal birth was kind of the ultimate end goal, but I was also very open and very realistic that shit can hit the fan and you just never know what is going to happen. I did quite like the idea of being in a hospital just in case, but then I did also toy with the idea for a little bit that maybe I could do a home birth, but then I was like, oh, first birth, I think it's better to just stick to the hospital scenario. Stick to that one. Just in regards to the testing, we did do all the standard testing, that sort of thing. So we got a dating scan because we just due to my irregular periods, we weren't too sure how far through I was. Then got the 20-week scan, or 12-week scan, and then the 20-week scan. And then all the blood work that goes with there, and then the gestational diabetes. I'm not too sure necessarily if I in the future have any more children, if I would get the diabetes one again. I totally understand its importance and relevance, but I just didn't really have any risk factors. So, and I know that some people get it without having risk factors, but I'm just not sure I'd necessarily opt in for that next time. And I'll probably chat about this a bit further, but I ended up having some extra scans at the end in the last couple of weeks before Heidi was born.
And do you want to talk us through what those scans were for?
Yes, that kind of aligns with what you mentioned just earlier. So I, in my 12-week scan, they highlighted that I had an anterior placenta. So just, I suppose, for other people, but you'll probably know this, it means your placenta's on the front. So basically acts as like a big pillow, essentially, on the front of your tummy. And so for me, that meant that I actually didn't feel any Babs's movement until she was about 26 weeks. Which was quite far along because everyone was like, oh, you should be feeling flutters, it should be feeling really nice, and I was like, I literally can't feel anything, should I be feeling something? And then you're like, is it, and you're like, oh no, it's just like a bit of gas or something. So didn't feel anything until about 26 weeks. As I mentioned previously, I was super active throughout my pregnancy, so I didn't gain a hell of a lot of weight. In regards to anywhere on my body, I was pretty same size. I didn't buy any maternity clothes because everything was fitting and people, not that I'm like gloating about it because it's not something to gloat about. It's just what my body did. People didn't even really know I was pregnant just because my belly was just all baby really. But as we started to like get to the third trimester, and they started measuring your belly a bit more. I don't know if you had that, but like the fundal height, so from your, I think it's like from your pelvic bone to your somewhere at the top of your stomach. They started to notice that from about 31 weeks, each time I got measured, it wasn't increasing or was barely increasing at all, which they, you think that's when baby's getting really, really big. So baby should be growing quite a bit during that time. So they were just a little bit concerned about that. Even though they were well aware that I was still, you know, exercising and stuff like that, there should still have been some growth. So from there, it was like, oh, let's just check up on Bubs and see, is Bubs growing okay? Is everything all right in there? So I had a couple of growth scans. Everything was going all good. I think the thing was they had to have them spaced out like fortnightly to in order for baby to grow enough to be able to make the comparisons. Okay. When I got up to, I think it was like 36 weeks, I ended up having a couple of episodes of reduced fetal movements. So this was a little bit of a mindfuck essentially for me, because I'd had those like not super crazy movements having the anterior placenta. So sometimes I didn't feel baby move a whole lot of the time.
Mm.
And so when I did have reduced movements or what I perceived to be reduced movements, I thought I was overthinking it. And I was like, oh, should I call Antonia about this or do I not? And then you get yourself into a bit of a state because you're like, well, what if I don't call? And then something's wrong with the baby. And you hear those really sad stories where, you know, the baby does pass and that sort of thing. And then, you know, was like, oh, maybe I should act. So the first time I was like, no, I'm not going to work myself into a state. Prior to calling the midwife, I did everything they say, you know, drink cold water, lie on your side, jump up and down, have some lollies, everything like that. And like, you know, push and probe the baby. And rang up Antonia, and she, I think this was in the morning, and she said, come on round to my house, because it was just around the road, and we'll just have a check what's going on. So I went round there, and she checked baby, and she's like, yeah, baby's heart rate's all good, they're going fine. She shoved baby a few times, and baby reacted to that, and she's like, she'd put her hand, or like feel quite deeply on my tummy, and be like, can you feel this inside? And it was baby kicking, but I couldn't feel it. But she could feel it. So it was it was almost like there was a disconnect between what was going on in my body, but what I could actually feel from the inside. Yeah. And I really do think that was that anterior placenta. So it was like, okay. She's like, but do not be, and I'd probably say this to other people too, do not be alarmed or worried or think you're overreacting to make that call to your midwife to say, hey, I'm having reduced movements. It's so much better to be safe than sorry, 100%. I think she tried to get the baby's heart rate and stuff, like I said, but then she decided also that maybe we should go into the hospital just to be sure and hook me up to the CTG machine, which I think that's what it's called, monitors their heart rate and movements and that sort of thing. So she was pretty sure everything was fine, but just wanted to like track it and everything. So went on in there and did that and got that all tested, and baby was fine and stuff. But the hospital said, if you do get reduced movements again, please let Antonia and please let us know, and just come straight in to us instead, like skip that process and just come straight in, because rather be safe than sorry. So yeah, about I think maybe 8 days, I get my dates confused here, but it must have been when I was about 38 weeks, it happened again. And so I rang up Antonia and said, hey, this has been going on for about an hour or 2 hours, I've done everything. And she's like, all right, let's go straight into hospital, not like ED or anything, just into, it's almost like part of the birth ward in a bit, and they can look after you in there. And so we went in there and again sat there and had to be there for a few hours while they monitored me. And basically part of the hospital policy is if you present with reduced movements for a third time, then they really would like to perform an induction on you to get baby out, because obviously with reduced movements, something's not going quite right there. So they did signal that at that time. They said, hey, totally all good if you come in again, but if you do, we'd really like to do an induction. So then after that, Antonia and I decided to come up with a wee plan of attack. I think this was on like the Friday, and the following weekend she was going away. So our plan was to try get baby out, ideally, in an avoided induction, and try to do like instantate birth naturally before she went away. It was kind of like all guns blazing, all hands on deck, let's try we can like to get this baby out, because obviously this baby isn't liking being in there. It's not really, you know, if it's having slowed down movements and things. I just realized I forgot to mention in between the two reduced fetal movements, they told me that I not to exercise, which was quite detrimental to my mental health at the time, because that was the only way I was staying a little bit sane. But then after the second time, they said that I could return to exercise, that baby was growing. It was just that the movements were being reduced, even though my fundal height wasn't increasing still. Even at that late stage in pregnancy, I still, baby just seemed to be taking everything from me, it seemed. Plan of attack became, let's get baby out, essentially. I ideally wanted to avoid an induction. I'd done heaps of research on inductions. I'd listened to heaps of your podcasts about inductions and how people had really beautiful ones and that sort of thing. So I wasn't worried about that, but if I could try start it naturally, then that was kind of the goal. So, and Tony was like, all right, let's get some stretch and sweeps going. So on the Monday, we did a stretch and sweep. And I have never experienced anything like that in my entire life. Golly, they're an experience. So we went into the hospital for that because they quite like to get that sometimes to be done in I suppose that environment. And I will never ever forget, she had her hands right up there and she just goes, I can feel your baby's head right now. And I nearly vomited there on the bed. I was my Lord. Definitely a very, I'm not going to sugarcoat it, very painful experience. But at that point, I was going to do anything kind of possible to get this baby out healthy in a way. Yeah. And if that meant this, that meant this. And so she said on that Monday when she did that first one that actually she could get right up in there, get straight to baby's head. So things were already starting to open up and start to work. And I was about 1 to 2 centimetres at that point. So she said that was in the morning. And so I went back to work I'd already finished work that day. I went to the gym, I think, afterwards. And then she was like, go for a big ass walk, do some curb walking. So I was stomping up and down the streets of Johnsonville. Didn't care how much of a dick I looked like. I was like, nah, we're going for this. We're doing this. So that was the Monday. And then prior to this already, I'd started doing things like dates, raspberry leaf tea, a little bit of perennial massage, but had found that a little bit uncomfortable. Had even tried Sam to have a go there, and we just ended up giggling, and it just was not gonna be a going thing. The plan of attack then was to come, if nothing happened, then to come in on the Tuesday to get another stretch and sweep. So I think I got a little bit of cramping on the Monday, but nothing untoward or anything like that. And then on the Tuesday, went in for another stretch and sweep. Just continued on. I think I was a little bit more open. So instead of being 1 to 2, I was now 2 centimetres, same sort of thing. We were like, all right, we'll give it one more shot. If you're on the Wednesday, we'll do a stretch and sweep. And if you haven't gone into labour by then, we might just need to put it on pause for Antonia to go away on her holiday and have her time away. And then hopefully baby will come the next week. She did have, obviously, backup midwives, but I got in a really good relationship with her, and my partner was getting along with her really well. So if we could make it that she was there, if we had a little bit of control over an uncontrollable situation, then we were going to kind of see if she was going to be there. So, on the Wednesday, we did another stretch and sweep, and I think I was about 2 to 3 centimetres at that point. I went to E45 to a wee cardio sesh because I was like, well, why the hell not, you know? Lots of curb walking. That was, I think I lost my mucus plug too. And when people were like, oh, how will I know how I lose my mucus plug? I was like, oh, okay. That is definitely a mucus plug right there. There is no denying that. It is just a big, long snot, isn't it? Yeah, sorry for the details, but so lost my mucus plug then, and I was like, all right, well, that's a positive sign. And Antonia was like, yeah, that's really good, but also be aware that sometimes it can come off in bits, and it could mean nothing's going to happen for a week. And I wasn't yet 39 weeks yet, so it was still, I wasn't, overdue or anything like that at this point. I remember we watched The Bachelor that night, and we had some, like a HelloFresh Mexican meal or something, because I was like, oh, a little bit of spice might be good for the mix. And I had some cramping when I'd been out curb walking, a bit like period crampy, but nothing major, nothing that I hadn't had the past couple of days with the stretch and sweeps. And then went to bed, didn't think anything of anything. I was like, oh, here we go, another night of just, try and get this baby out. And then woke up with a little bit of a start. I think it was about like 10:30, 10:45, and I was like, ooh, there's something going on in my tummy. And I was like, oh, is that the Mexican? Was that a silly decision having black beans? Like, what have I done? And so I got up and went bathroom. And as it seems like a lot of women or people it happens to, the bowels just opened, and I thought that was my Mexican coming out of me again. So I was just like, all right, well, I'll hop back into bed. And I kind of just kept like feeling like what I now know is contractions. Mm. And I was like, these are quite sore. Like maybe this medicine really hasn't done wonders on me. It didn't like me. And so I was like, oh, I'll just go downstairs. And my partner Sam was asleep in bed, and he doesn't cope with not a lot of sleep, so I didn't want to wake him up. So I went downstairs, and I was like, oh, I think there's a little bit of a something going on here. So I went downstairs, and we had just some like fairy lights set up in the lounge. To be completely honest, they've probably been up for like 5 years since Christmas and God knows when, but they were up, and I was like, oh, I might flip them on, set the mood a little bit. And then I was like, oh, I do have a wee contraction timer. I wonder if I should just like see what's going on here and that sort of thing. So I started timing them, and basically from about like half an hour in, they were 45 seconds long and every 3 minutes. So I was like, what is this shit? I have watched movies. People have given birth and they've had plenty of time to pot around and do things. I was like, what is this? So I was like, oh, surely, like, you know, it's so early. Nah, nothing's really happening, but this must just be what happens. And I've just, you know, I thought I'd done all the reading I needed to do. I just couldn't get over how sore and intense they were straight away. Like I was getting very, very little respite. And then it got to about 1 a.m. and I was like, I think I should wake Sam up. He probably wants to be down here for this, / I need him down here for this. So I went and woke him up and I was like, babe, I think I'm in labor. And he was like, woke up with like a start. And he was like, oh, what can I do? And he kind of jumped up and came downstairs and things. And then he came down, and I don't think he was fully aware of like how far through I might have been at that point. And he could see me on all fours downstairs on the couch. And he was like, oh, okay. Yep. And so I think I lasted for about half an hour more. And I was like, yeah, I think we need to get mum and my auntie over. So the plan for who was going to be in the birthing suite with me was going to be the midwife, Sam, and then my mum and my mum's sister, my auntie, because mum, I love her dearly, but she can get quite excited and crazy, whereas Fiona, my auntie, is quite a calming presence. And I knew Sam, he doesn't usually do well with blood and guts and that sort of thing. And we'd watched like One Born Every Minute. I made him watch so many episodes of that with me, and he did get into it in the end, but like he was like, yeah, I just, you know, he needed support people more than I did, if that makes sense. We had the whole whānau around at this point. And then we kept timing, and everything on the contraction timer kept popping up, being like, you need to go to hospital. You need to go to hospital. I was like, mum, but I haven't been going that long. Like I've been only going a few hours now, but it was like, go to hospital, pack your bags, go to hospital. And everything I read had been like, you know, you're probably not as far through as what you think. So if you can hold off for a little bit longer. And I knew there was that like unwritten rule about hospitals that they wouldn't take you in if you weren't like 4 centimeters or thereabouts or something like that. And so I was like, no, I need to keep pushing through. And I tried a few different things. So we had the Swiss ball, and the Swiss ball was marvelous in the last couple of weeks of pregnancy, bouncing around the lounge and that, and finding different positions that you're comfortable with. I think I got my contractions got too intense too fast, so I never had time to set up a TENS. Like we had a TENS machine, but I never had time to set it up, to get it going, to figure out what was good, because there was never going to be any good at the point I was at that time. Nothing was going to do good. But yeah, I just remember leaning on chairs, leaning on the couch, and then there was a lot of talk around about like maybe we should call Antonia, because I was well aware it was the middle of the night at this point, at like 2 a.m. or something. You know, and you don't really want to call them and wake them up unless you really want to, even though, you know, they probably know that they're expecting a call. So at about 3 a.m. we were like, nah, let's call Antonia. And she could hear me in the background making noises, and she tried to talk to me on the phone, and I couldn't talk to her. So she was like, yeah, let's just head on in, eh? These contractions are too close to you for my liking. So we're like, cool, sweet. So we decided to head on in. And as is quite typical of birthing stories, we were driving from Johnsonville to Newtown, if people know Wellington. So it's probably about like a 25 minute drive, with no traffic or anything like that. And there was no traffic because it was 3 a.m. so everyone was in bed. But right before the hospital, and I think anyone that birthed around the same time as me, or the months around that time, there was roadworks on right outside the hospital, which was not ideal whatsoever. And we pulled up and there was like a stop-go person and you couldn't go in the main entrance to where the birthing unit slash like emergency area was. And he's like, oh, no, you can't get in there. You've got to go round this way. And I was literally like on all fours in the car. Seatbelt wasn't on. I was mooing and yelling and all sorts because it's a bloody awful thing driving in the car. And he's like, nah, you've got to follow the detour up and around here. And Sam was throwing a few expletives around. He was like, can't you see we're in labour? Like, we need to get through. And no, there was no way we're getting through there because they were doing some bloody tar sealing or something. And so ended up going this wrong up this detour. And then the chick, one of the road worker chicks at the other end, then gave us the wrong instructions about which entrance we needed to get into. So we ended up in this back service area. And it was just almost laughable. Like, Sam was being stressed and I was just like, of course this is where we end up. Like, of course that we do. Ended up finding where we needed to go. And Antonia had gone straight where she needed to go. Was like, well, what took you two so bloody long? Like, and we're like, oh, don't even ask. So got to the hospital eventually, got in where we needed to be. But I feel like that's something that people don't quite talk to you enough about either, is the walk from the car to the hospital when you're literally stopping every like 5 to 10 steps and you're like, oh no, and you keel over and you do your breathing and you do your bits and bobs, and then you come to and you're like, yep, I'm good to go again, and you do another 10 steps and then you keel over. And yeah, so we got there in the end and got in. And I vividly remember one of the midwives as we came in saying, oh, you're birthing on a great night, there's only one other girl in here. And I was like, marvellous. I mean, it wouldn't have mattered to me if there was 50 or one really at that point. But yeah, so we got into the room and Antonio was like, let's just see what's going on. Let's hook you up a little bit, because obviously we had been having those reduced fetal movements and that sort of thing. Not during labour, but just wanted to make sure. And then she's such a dad. I love her so much. She was just like, well, should we get the show on the rope? Do you want to start getting this baby out? And I was like, yeah, I could do that. And she's like, all right, how about we break your waters? And I was like, yeah, go on, why not? And thank God she did, because she broke my waters. And then she's like, Grace, your kids shat all inside you. I was like,
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Oh, bugger. So yeah, for people that obviously don't know, that means that your baby's a little bit under stress, essentially, because they pooed themselves inside you, which is not good. So that basically that moment there changed the entirety of the future of my labour and some of the decisions we made in regards to getting a healthy bubs out. So from there, they really want you hooked up as much as possible. So you've got the thing around your belly, you've got monitors on, and really reduces your ability to say get in the bath or get in the shower and that sort of thing. So I continued labouring on for another hour. Baby seemed all good. And I was just doing my thing on all fours because that seemed to work for me, making lots of noise. And then Antonia came and she said, all right, let's talk pain relief. What do you want to do? Do you want anything? Do you want the gas? And I was like, absolutely freaking not. The thought of gas and sucking on something right now, nah. Because I had this really weird like breathing thing that was working quite well for me. I'm not too sure if it was from your breathing techniques or a modification of a few things, but I was doing this like four in, four out. And as long as I focused on four in, four out, I was okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, so she was like, gas. And I was like, no, absolutely not. She's like, okay, we'll do no gas then. And then she was like, all right, well, let's have a serious conversation about an epidural. And she's like, if shit hits the fan, as this kid seems to like to create a bit of a scene, then if you don't have an epidural, then there is a high, high chance, and I'm pretty sure an obstetrician came in at this point too, there is a high chance that you'll just need to be knocked out completely for an emergency C-section. There won't be time for you to have a spinal or an epidural or anything like that. We just would need to get the kid out. Whereas if you have an epidural, then we can just top that up more if you do need to go for an emergency C-section and you can still be awake. And so basically that whole conversation there, it was a pretty simple decision, really. It was like, obviously the baby wasn't too happy inside. They had pooed and they were stressing, and they wanted to get out, you know, wanted to come party with us. I understand, we're quite good fun. And so it was like, yeah, let's get the epidural. I really wanted to be awake no matter what sort of delivery I had. I didn't want to be knocked out. I wanted to be there to see the birth of the baby, whatever way or shape that kind of took. So we're like, sweet, cool, let's get the epidural. And that, like I said, there was only one other person birthing at that particular time. So the epidural came pretty quick. And it was almost surreal. It was like something out of the movies when the epidural comes in and they like talk to you about it all. And you're like, oh my God, I'm actually getting this injection that people, you know, you've heard about, and then you're finally getting it yourself. But as I know, I'm not alone, and it is such a scary thing getting the epidural done, because you just have to sit there, but you're still obviously contracting because you don't have the pain relief yet. And I just remember like screaming, being like, it's coming, the contraction is coming. Stop, don't do it. And of course they weren't going to do it because they can like sense it coming on the monitors and stuff, but I didn't know that. So I was like, no. And then they ended up, I think he'd like pop, not burst something or not pop something, but something like there was a little blood vessel that got a little bit nicked or something like that. So they had to do it again, which again isn't uncommon, but good to kind of be aware of that sometimes, you know, first time it doesn't work and that sort of thing. So I got that in, and Sam was absolutely shitting himself when I got that in. I think he was more scared for me getting that done than the actual birth. So my auntie was taking photos throughout the whole process. Not that I needed like a romanticized vision of birth or anything like that, but I just really wanted to see what the baby coming out of wherever it came out of looked like. That was purely selfish purposes. So, so the look on Sam's face as I was in the epidural, he was like biting his nails. He was so nervous, so scared. But also gripping my hand very tightly as I squeezed his. So he was a great support there. But yeah, got that done. And then it took a little bit of time for that to get into effect. I think like 5 or 10 minutes. And then, oh my Lord, I just remember being like to Mum, why doesn't everyone get this? Why would you choose not to get this? It was like amazing. I could control it. I could be like, yeah, I want to feel more. Yeah, I want to feel less. I just like relaxed so much. Sam got to have a sleep, so he was stoked. I was like, this is amazing. Like, why would you go through all that pain? I mean, I get why you go through all that pain. I get it. But I was also like, this is brilliant. What an amazing invention. And so I think we were like, okay, well, after that's all gone on, let's just have a check, see where you're at. And at this point, I was thinking I was like 4 to 5 centimetres. And I don't think Antonia checked me when I first came in because she broke my water so quickly that there was no real point. And once, you know, there'd been meconium, I wasn't leaving the hospital. Yeah. At this point, I was like 4 to 5 centimetres. And they were just like, Antonia was just like, well, we're just going to let you kind of ride it out from here. They put oxytocin in me to like speed it up a little bit because obviously baby still was like, okay, but like would be better on the outside. So just want to keep things moving a little bit. And then at about 6 a.m. we had a really scary moment where that's amazing. It's really amazing. I laugh, but I shouldn't laugh. How calm these professionals are in the situation. Yes. So Antonia was just like, Sam, can you just push that button behind your head there? And he was like, oh, okay, turn around, push the button, and then like 20 gazillion people run into the room. And basically what had happened was that baby's heart rate had really, really dropped, and hence why they had rushed everyone in. So they basically reclined me on the bed and turned me on my side. I think it was to get baby into a position to get the heart rate to baby's heart rate going a bit better. But while they were doing this, and this is something I, in all my preparation, had never read about epidurals, was that epidurals make you shake. And no one had ever told me that. So when I was on the side position, Did you know that, or do you obviously
Yeah,
know
I
that
did only
now?
because that happened to me.
Well, there you go. I'm preaching to the preached here. But yeah, so they put me on my side to get baby's heart rate back, or boost it up a bit. And as they turned me on my side, I started just like uncontrollably shaking, and I could see fear in Sam's eyes. And they were like, no, it's all right. This is just part of the epidural. And it was like you were like freezing cold, shaking like you were in Antarctica, but you weren't. You were obviously warm. They put blankets over you. Oh, that was lovely. They have the warm blankets that feel like they've literally come out of like the dryer. Beautiful. And they put them across you. It's lovely. The little things you remember, eh? But yeah, so there was a very scary 8 minutes where they were like, you can hear, you're lying there and you're like, they're talking about you, but they're not talking with you. They're talking to each other about you. And you could just hear things like C-section, this, blah, blah, blah. And, when you're worried like that in that particular situation, like, yes, my ideal was a vaginal birth at that time. I was like, I don't care. I honestly don't give a fuck at this point. If I have to go for a C-section, that's what I'm going to do. I just want this baby out happy. And so then they turned me on my other side because baby's heart rate wasn't sorting itself out. And then it just suddenly, all of a sudden, just sorted itself out and perked back up again. And baby was happy as. And so they decided to turn the oxytocin off because they were like, I don't think babies, like you've already got naturally quite intense contractions. I don't think we actually need the oxytocin to make it even harder and more intense for baby. And so we'll give you a bit of extra time to see how long you dilate and keep on going. And very luckily for me, from there, my contractions just naturally ramped up on their own. I could keep on like meddling with my epidural and figuring that out. I was also quite scared at this point that I would have to still go for an emergency C-section. So I kept topping up my epidural if I started to feel even like the slightest bit of movement or contraction, that sort of thing, which may not have been, it might have been to my detriment, as I'll continue on earlier. But at that time, that was just like what I thought was kind of good. So that was, yeah, got given some time to like continue on progressing. And then at about 10:30, sorry. About 10:30, they were like, "Oh, should we just do a check?" And or Antonia was like, "I'll just do a check just to see how far along you are." And then she was like, "Oh, well, we're 10 centimeters now, aren't we?" And I just remember my mum like hooping and hollering. And I returned to her and I was like, "Mum, I've still got to get the baby out. It doesn't mean the baby's here yet." But we were very surprised that from about like say 7 till 10, I'd probably like gone about 6 centimeters in that short space of time, which just seemed incredible. So yeah, they there was no it was weird because I thought, oh yep, 10 centimeters, boom, let's start pushing now, that's how things go. But as kind of people in hospitals and things go, they're all very calm and controlled, and that nothing's a rush unless it's an emergency. And so Antonio was like, no, just rest up for a little bit longer, take your time, I'll just go sort some things out here, and then when you come back we can start pushing. And there was always the obstetrician doctors nearby just in case because of what had happened, what had preceded things. And then at about 11 a.m. she was like, I think we're ready to start pushing, Grace. Do you want to start pushing? Because baby's heart rate was starting to get a little bit low again. And I'm like, yeah, let's get this baby out. So started pushing, and probably pushed for about like 10 minutes. And then baby's heart rate started dropping low again, and so again all the doctors rushed in. It was like another party in there again. And they started talking about different things, like there was C-section and Vontuse and forceps and lots of things thrown around. And I considered myself quite lucky at that point that I'd been so into reading and researching prior, and watched so many like One Born Every Minute, because when they were saying things like forceps or Vontuse or those sorts of things, I was like, oh yeah, I know what they are. That might mean I might need an episiotomy or things. And so I could be like quite, I felt really well educated that I knew what they were talking about. And so what they said to me is, they said, Grace, it's nearly 11:15 now. We're going to give you 15 minutes to have another go pushing. We've got a C-section booked at 11:30. At the moment, that's got your name booked on it if you can't get this baby out. But if you can, awesome. But if you can't, we're going to take baby there to get baby out safely. They said, we really want to try a Vontuse delivery, so the Kiwi cup where they kind of suction and pull out, as baby is just right there, but you just need a little bit of extra help, like getting them out. So I was like, in my brain, I was like, well, Girl loves a challenge, doesn't she? If you're telling me I've got to 11:30, I'm going to do it. So, yeah, so at 11:15, 11, we started pushing again. And this is when what I mentioned about the epidural, how I'd loaded it up. I couldn't feel a thing in regards to my contractions. They had to tell me, all right, start pushing now and push. And you just don't know where you're pushing. I was like, am I taking a dump? Am I squeezing my vagina? You just don't know. You have to just listen to their instructions. They are so, so amazing at it. But I do think what it would have felt like or how I would have done pushing wise had I not loaded up on the epidural. But you can say what ifs about everything. But
Yeah, of course.
So they gave me, so we started pushing at 11:15 and I had that 11:30 time of mind that they were going to take me away if I, for a C-section, if baby didn't get out by then. And with the Vontus delivery, she was born at 11:27. So, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I was 3 minutes faster than what they had said. So that was a success. But yeah, she, with just big pushes and a little bit of help and assistance from the Kiwi Cup, and out she came.
Yeah.
Well, what we didn't know was a she, but turned out to be she. And yeah.
Yeah, so cool. And did they put her up onto your chest straight away? What sort of happened next?
Yeah, so they did verbalise to us earlier because of the meconium and the stress that baby had been under. So that was why so many people were in there. The paediatricians were in there and they got the resus area sorted and that sort of thing. But she came out and just screamed. So I think everyone just like exited very, very quickly. And straight away she got put up onto my chest. And because we obviously didn't know the sex, Mum was like, what is she, to Sam? And then Sam's like, well, I don't know, where do I look? And we're like, Sam, like, you know, the genital area kind of thing. But yeah, she got put up onto my chest and it was, I know everyone says the same thing, but like such a surreal, beautiful moment, the craziest but most amazing moment of my entire life, you know. After all of that, that this baby was actually on me and was breathing and well and everything, it was just like, holy moly.
Yeah, amazing. And what happened next? Did they sort of leave you in the room for a while, or did you go up to recovery, or what happened next?
Yeah, so a little bit of a whirlwind from there, but I do remember things pretty well because I think I was pretty with it. She was on my chest for a hell of a long time. I did have my feet in the stirrups from when they were doing the Vontus delivery, and they kind of remained in there. And I remember someone saying to me that I had needed 3 stitches. I had a little tear that they needed to sort out, which when you look at the photos of how many hands were up in my vagina, you can understand why there was probably a bit of a tear there. But also that's why it was good I had the epidural, because didn't feel a thing. And so she was just on my chest and while the stitches were being done. That did seem like it took a very long time, but not that I was worried because I was just staring at this baby on my chest. But yeah, it did seem like it took a very, very long time. Of course, they probably want to do a very good job, hence why they take a while, but that seemed like it took a long time. And then had to birth the placenta, which you almost forget about. You're like, oh shit, that's right, there's something left in there. And you're like, oh shit. And I genuinely can't remember if I needed the injection to get it out or not. I feel like I did because they wanted to get it out quickly. But I just remember a little push / Antonia pulling on it slightly. And that was almost the weirdest sensation than giving birth to Heidi, was that coming out. That honestly felt like you'd taken, like, you hadn't been for a poo in 10 days and you'd finally gone for one and your stomach was flat as. That's what the placenta coming out felt like. It was the weirdest sensation ever. But yeah, we all just stayed in the room. Heidi was just on my chest for a while. And we had to go up breastfeeding, and I'd heard about this, but I never in my wildest dreams thought that this would happen. But she did the whole breast crawl thing where she's on the chest and then literally like crawls to your boob. I mean, at this point they were pretty big, so it was a bit hard to miss. So I don't know if that was talent or not by Heidi. But yeah, she did the whole breast crawl thing. And went there, and that was amazing. And you're like, oh my god, there's this baby on my tit. Like, wow, this is amazing. And then it was really, really fascinating because Antonia put the placenta in a bowl. Me personally, I didn't have any like care or link to my placenta, so I didn't feel the need to like keep it or anything, but I know some people do. But she was like, do you want to see it, and do you want me to talk about it to you? And I was like, yeah, go on. I'm like fascinated by this stuff. And so she's like, well, this is why I think it's good that baby came out when they did. And she's like, look at all these bits on your placenta. Essentially, your placenta's buggered. Hence why you weren't putting on weight, and why baby was getting a little bit stressed, and why it's so glad that we got baby out, because if we kept baby in longer, things might not have been super amazing for them. So I always joked that Heidi is one of these babies that was just better out than in, just due to the placenta, you know. Which is so, so fascinating, and really interesting to know, given the situation that we got to that point. And then after that, I remember going for the first shower with Antonia, and it was just a bloodbath. Like, the best shower, because you need a shower. I mean, jelly legs walking over there, but just blood going limit everywhere.
Yeah.
And then she was like, I'll just give you like a little bit of time in here by yourself, but if you get woozy, let me know. And then I made the rookie error of looking at myself in the mirror. And I'm just going to say this because I've told some of my closest friends this, and I feel like it's something that women and people that give birth need to know too. But like, I checked myself in the mirror and I was like, hey girl, how you going? And then I looked down and I was like, holy shit, your vulva are dangling down by your knees, or like the flaps are dangling down by your knees. They were so swollen. I've never seen, like, obviously I've never seen anyone else's apart from mine in that situation, but that caught me by surprise big time. So if anyone gives birth and is mortified by that, you're not alone. And I was just like, oh my god, how they ever didn't get back to normal. Like, they honestly just looked like they'd gone through a battle. Well, I suppose they had, but like, wow. They are back to normal size now, I'm happy to report. But that was like, oh, why did I look at that? So the first shower, amazing. First shower was so, so good.
Awesome. Yeah. I think there'll be lots of people that relate to that story.
We're not alone, are we?
For sure. Awesome. And what happened next? When did you get to go home, and what was that experience like?
A lot of the stuff I remember because there's photos of them. So if you've got someone that can take some photos, even if they're just like on an iPhone like ours, I'm like, oh yeah, that's right, that happened, because I had a wee look see beforehand. So Sam dressed her with the midwife, and I forgot to mention, she was born very small too. Not hugely small in the scale of things, but she was 5 pounds 14. So just a little wee thing. Which is another reason why, you know, better out than in and that sort of thing. But we brought newborn clothes, thinking newborn will fit, and she really needed to be in prem stuff. It was just all swimming on her. And it was amazing when we got back to the room how much pink stuff my mum had managed to source for us, having only found out that the baby was a girl in 2 hours. Like, that she is a resourceful woman, that Marie. Really is. So Sam dressed her with the midwife, and they did all the like checks and things that they do. And then they did I think blood glucose tests and that sort of thing. And then we got taken up to the room, and she had another blood glucose test. I think it was something to do with her size or something, that they take extra ones. I'm not entirely sure. But she had a funny reading on one of the blood glucose tests that was a wee anomaly. And my midwife was almost like, oh, I really don't think this. And I hope I'm not throwing her in the bus here, but she's like, I really don't think that's a true reflection of where Bubs is at. Bubs is fine, because basically what that, and I'm sorry, this is going to end up taking forever, this story, but basically what that low glucose test meant that we had to stay 24 hours because she needed to be monitored, because she needed to get her blood sugars up. And it meant that I had to feed her, every time I fed her, which was at least every 3 hours, she needed 12 mil top up every single time to get her blood sugars up. So we went to the room, and then she had to go into, I can't remember the exact terminology of the room, whether it's NICU or one of, it wasn't like, not for the teeny tiny babies, but they just, there's a special machine in there that they need. So we went in there, and we did see some very teeny tiny babies, but it wasn't because she was teeny tiny. And they just had to do some special testing on her, and then came back. And they said that this is the protocol. that we need to adhere to. And then Tony was like, yeah, I'm not really all for this protocol, but I totally understand and respect it, and it is probably the best thing that you're going to have to do.
Yeah.
So, yeah, went back to the room and we suited ourselves up. And I think my, this was like late afternoon by that point, so like maybe 3 or 4 p.m. And there's a photo of me on the bed. I was so, so hungry because I hadn't eaten since my disastrous Mexican meal the night before. And there's a there's a Burger Fuel just down the road from Wellington Hospital. And so my partner went and got me a burger and kumara fries. If you know me, you know I absolutely frothed kumara fries. And I just, there's a photo of me in bed looking absolutely stunning, eating my meal, and Heidi's asleep in the bassinet cot thing next to the bed. And it's like, yeah, that was like, I was like, I've done a bloody good job here. I've put in a big stint. I deserve this. Yeah, so that was that point. And then, yeah, basically they came in and said, this is the protocol that's going to be happening for however long we need you to continue this, which is a minimum of 24 hours. You need to feed ideally every 3 hours. And every time that you do feed, you need to supplement with 12 mils of whatever it is that you can. So I had been super duper lucky that I had collected essentially a shit ton of colostrum prior to giving birth. I'd done that. That was also one of the things that Antonio recommended, to try and get birth going, but something I was going to do anyway, and I had quite large success with, was collecting quite a bit of that. So I remember when we brought that in, one of the midwives was like, oh wow, you do have quite a stash. But I don't know if you know how much colostrum you get from your boobs compared to 12 mils, which is how much Heidi needed a top up per feed. There's a little bit of a discrepancy in numbers there. So I was like pretty good at getting a good couple of mils every night of colostrum when I was like essentially milking myself. But 12 mils in one stint, one feed to a baby is a lot. So our stores got diminished pretty quick. And I'm really not sure why I put this on me, but I was like, nah, my supply's pretty good. I can just squeeze this out. And I just remember, like, I just fed Heidi. It was the middle of the evening, and I was just, like, milking my tit while this midwife had this little plastic cup that she was collecting my colostrum at that point, to then supplement Heidi with 12 mils extra, which just seemed absolutely exorbitant because whatever she was sucking from me just seemed fine anyway. And a lot of it was getting spilt anyway. So, after about, I think, the third time of me, like, my tits were almost like sore because I'd been squeezing them so much. I was just like, this is silly. And then one of the midwives was like, you needed to come to that realization by yourself, you know? Like, and they're like, do you want us to just do a formula top up instead? Like, I'd feed her, but then they'd just do formula. And I was like, honestly, I don't even give a fuck at this point. Like, I've been milking myself like a cow for the past 12 hours. This is just silly stuff. So we did that, and that was fine. Maybe in hindsight, she would have been fine without any of those top-ups, but it's just what they had to do. Did that overnight, and the people that work in the hospitals and the birthing units are beautiful people. They just come in, and they're so happy and so excited to see you and your baby, and so, so helpful and giving you advice because, like, you know, like, although our road with breastfeeding was pretty straightforward and very, very simple, and I was very blessed that I didn't get cracked nipples or anything or sore nipples at any point, you still don't know what the hell you're doing, and you need someone to show you that you need to smush your boob and what you need to do, and to get, especially because Heidi was such this little baby, that, you know, her mouth wasn't super big compared to the size of my boob. So yeah, it was so lovely having people in there that help you out. I mean, I know that's your job, but they are beautiful humans.
Yeah, for sure. It's nice to hear that experience too. I think it's really encouraging. Awesome. And how did you find it, like, going home with her and being in that sort of newborn stage and adjusting to life as a mum once you got home? Like, what was all of that like for you?
Yeah, so our plan was to go to the Kenepuru birthing unit. I've heard really good things there. But after the night of just milking myself and just full-on stuff, I was like, you know what, I just want to go to my own bed. She was doing really well. She was thriving. She was exceeding all their expectations. We just wanted to be our own space. I pretty much had feeding down, not to gloat, but just, it was for us a very simple road in regards to feeding, and that does happen. And so I didn't really feel like I needed that extra support. Sam and mine's family both live very, very close, as in, like, literally in the same neighbourhood. He's got quite a few brothers and sisters. I've got my mum, my auntie very nearby, and my dad had come down too. So I knew if we went home, you know, we weren't going to be left high and dry. So we made the decision to come home basically as soon as the test results said she could. We just gapped it out there, and that drive home was hilarious because you just had the most precious cargo on board and everyone is a boy racer driving about town and how dare they drive so erratically. So got home and we kind of found our groove pretty quick, and this is kind of why I wanted to come on the podcast and share my story, is because nothing or not everything needs to be all grim and awful and terrible. Like, there can be really great okay stories too that go pretty smoothly. Like, Sam just stepped up big time, like he should do. He was doing nappy changes during the night, and then I just fed. Once my milk came in, I was so engorged. Like, I could have fed the entirety of New Zealand with my milk. I was very, very blessed with a large milk supply. I leaked on the sheets and everything, but didn't faze him. He just stepped up right from the get-go. We were just so besotted with our little girl, and I know it's quite unorthodox, but we had so many people around in those first 2 weeks. I'm a real social person, and I just almost wanted to show Heidi off. I want to be hey, here's this little thing. We made this. She's pretty bloody cute. Come see her. But I think that took its toll on Sam. He felt really socialized out, whereas I was no, come on round, give her a cuddle. We kind of got into the swing of things pretty quickly. We were so lucky with the support we had too. So I think for me personally, the best thing I did and continue to do is leave her with people. And I don't mean go for days or weeks or anything like that, but I just mean even when she was less than a week old, mum would be leave her with me, you and Sam go for a walk around the block for half an hour. And so she just had to cope with being with mum for half an hour. Or 2 weeks old, I'd leave her with Sam and I'd, go and do my own thing. I'd go to quickly nip down to the supermarket or something. And that we kind of just continued that theme and have continued that theme right through. So that ever since she was little, she's just been used to being with such a range of people because she's got no choice, there's so many people that we love in our lives that are part of our lives that she just needs to slot into that part of our life too. And that involves being a super social baby. So for her, that means being able to spend time with a range of people. And maybe that's just her temperament and we're very lucky in that regard. But I do really think that you do need to relinquish some of that control if you feel like you can, so that you come back a better mum. Because I knew after I went for half an hour walks and stuff, I came back and then I was all right, I've had fresh air, I've had a coffee, I'm good to go. You're so much more a better mum. But I totally empathise that not everyone's in a position to have that level of support or feel like they can leave. I was super lucky too that Heidi was born on the 25th of March and it was Easter weekend coming up around there. So there was time off there where people could come around and stuff. But also my mum and auntie, I alluded to earlier, are teachers. And so I think it was 2 or 3 weeks later, it was the school holiday. So Sam went back to work and my mum and auntie had the 2 weeks of the school holidays off and they didn't book any holidays away. I was no, I am your holiday. You're coming to see me and Heidi. Which they were so keen to do, obviously. So that was, we're very, very lucky to have that support as well, that I just had people that were there that I could just lean on and rely and ask 20 gazillion questions mum, did this happen to you? Mum, was this formal? I don't know, because I don't bloody know.
Amazing. Oh, very cool. And how did you go with your physical recovery from birth?
I don't say lucky because I'm not lucky, because it's just what happened to me in the cards I got dealt, and that's just what happened. But although I had 3 stitches and they said a second degree tear, there was a couple of days and it was and a bit wincy. But I was up and moving ASAP. I mean, if you think about it, I literally did an E45 cardio class the day I went into labor. So it's unsurprising that my body / me was let's get back into it. So I was sensible about things. I didn't run for 3 months. I was very, very sensible in that regard. I was I do not want my insides falling out whatsoever. But yeah, definitely got into walking ASAP as soon as I felt comfortable and as soon as like the stitches are kind of gone. So like I would say at least 3 days postpartum, I would did like just a little 10-15 minute walk around the block, and then started building on that. And then it probably, and this is just for me, knowing that I have had, like I am a personal trainer and I know my body and it's what I've studied at uni and that sort of thing. But 2 weeks postpartum, I was able to do a little bit of weights, and then by 4 weeks postpartum, I was back at E45. And then by 6 weeks postpartum, I was back into everything bar running that I'd been doing beforehand. And that's not to have me as a guide. That is just to say that's what I was able to do and what my body was able to do, but well aware that not everyone is able to have that sort of physical recovery. That's just what felt good for me, and I just kind of rolled with it. That was kind of like my pregnancy. The whole time I was just like, if it feels good, I'm going to keep rolling with it, you know, like, and basically throughout my pregnancy, exercise just continued to feel good. So why would I kind of stop that? Yeah, I mean, of course I was sensitive to I'd just given birth and gone through all of that. So I wasn't silly about things, and I put off running until I felt comfortable. But yeah, no, I felt very fortunate that that's what my recovery kind of process was like in that regard.
Yeah.
One thing that I'm such a massive proponent for, and I really like, I love talking about my birth story, hence why I wanted to share it with you and with other people. I literally will tell any of my friends that listen, I'm like, do you want to see my birth photos? I'll tell you about it. I will. I'll show you. They're not that bad. It's really not that bad. But I really, really want to push that having education and having knowledge is so, 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 so powerful when it comes to giving birth. Yeah. I think you need to, one, in order to get into a position to advocate for yourself and get a birth that is a birth that you want or a birth that you're happy with, you need to be in a position to make choices and inform choices that come from a place of knowledge and education. So it's really on people as birthing people and their supporters and that sort of thing to do that research and do the education, so that when you are in a situation where they might say, hey, Grace, we might need to use a Vontus. That's not the first time you've heard the word Vontus. Mm. And you're like, what the F is that? What does that mean for me? Is my baby going to be okay? Instead, you come from a place of power and you go, yeah, Vontus, I know what that is. That means they're going to do a suction on the baby's cup. I might need an episiotomy. Yeah. That recovery looks like this. And you can make an informed decision from there. Truly, wholeheartedly believe that had I not been as prepared as I was for birth, then my birth could have been a very traumatic one. And I'm sure people probably hear my story and think, hey, that's really similar to mine, and I don't feel so positive and so happy talking about it, which is totally okay as well. And this is no judgment if people haven't done research or haven't done stuff, because we're all in different stages and life is bloody hectic. But just even with the things that happened near the end of my birth, end of my pregnancy, and in birth, I would 10 out of 10, and I was literally just talking to my flatmate about this, I would 10 out of 10 have the same birth I had with Heidi again, because I felt so, so empowered in that situation that I was making the right choices for me and my baby and my family, and I had the right people there supporting me. And that is something that all people that birth should be able to have. They should be able to have an empowered birth where they are in charge and in control, even if they have to make decisions that they maybe didn't want to make, that they still feel in control of that situation and feel like that is the birth I wanted and the birth I got, even if things were not my desirable one that you've written down on a bit of paper. Yeah, that's probably my big thing. And it almost makes me emotional talking about, because it upsets me that people don't have super positive birth, because it is such a special time in their life.
Yeah, I know. I feel you. That's why I'm doing the podcast and doing the birth course and all that sort of stuff, because I definitely feel the same way. It's just, education can make such a huge difference, and it's such a shame that we don't have a different way of providing people with that. But yeah, no, I definitely agree.
Yeah, and no, I definitely think with your mahi, you're on the right track with that sort of thing for sure. And,
oh, thank you.
Yeah, little baby steps that, you know, even if it touches one person, then that's really, really beautiful.
Yeah, exactly. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Grace, for coming on the podcast and sharing your story with us. I know there'll be lots of people out there who take a lot out of your story. So yeah, super grateful for you taking the time. Thank you.
No, thank you for having me, and sorry for talking so long.
Thanks so much for listening to this week's episode of Kiwi Birth Tales. I hope you have enjoyed it, and a big thank you to Grace for joining me. A reminder that this week's episode is brought to you by Your Birth Project, and if you want to create your best birth, it is the course that you need to do that. Or if you want to head to the online store, www.yourbirthproject.com, you can find products for pregnancy, birth, and postpartum that are tried and tested by New Zealand or Australian mums, and we all love them, so they are in the store for you to check out. So make sure you go and look at that, and I will bring you another awesome episode next week. Thanks for listening.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.